We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Republican Nikki Haley plans to enter the 2024 race for president. Plus, why war in Ukraine hasn't been a boon to U.S. defense companies so far. And fresh competition in the U.S. drug market.
Humira, it's been the U.S.'s biggest selling drug for years.
So if there's a way to reduce how much we spend on Humira, it will have this huge ripple effect.
It's Wednesday, February 1st. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Former South Carolina Governor and UN Ambassador Nikki Haley is planning to enter the race for the 2024 presidential nomination. That is, according to a person familiar with her plans, who said that Haley intends to launch her White House bid on February 15th. Haley was a critic of former President Donald Trump before becoming his UN representative for 2 years. Trump so far remains the only announced Republican presidential candidate. President Biden is expected to announce today a proposed rule to limit the late fees that credit card companies can charge customers, according to the White House. Administration officials say the rule, put forward by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, could go into effect by 2024 and doesn't require congressional approval. Journal editor Alex Frangos has more.
They want to reduce these missed payment fees from as much as $41 to $8. And last year, the CFPB said that consumers paid $12 billion in these late fees, which is quite a lot of money. This is all part of a broader move by the Biden administration to try to lower fees, what they call junk fees, things like airlines charging parents to sit next to their children on flights, or fees that you have to pay to switch your cell phone coverage.
President Biden is also expected to release a report calling on Apple and Alphabet's Google to ease restrictions on their app stores so that more companies can participate in mobile app markets. The Eurozone's annual rate of inflation has eased for a third straight month, with consumer prices 8.5% higher in January than a year earlier, down from 9.2% in December. That is according to the European Union's Statistics Agency. Journal reporter Paul Hannon.
The degree of the slowdown was a surprise. And obviously for Eurozone households, this is good news because a lot of the slowdown in inflation is to do with energy, and that's been a big burden for people to carry through the winter months.
Despite that decline in inflation, the European Central Bank has signaled that it will raise its key interest rate by half a percentage point tomorrow. And in a quick update on a story we covered earlier this week, Australian authorities say that a tiny capsule containing radioactive material has been found after a sprawling search over hundreds of miles of highway in the outback. Authorities believe the capsule went missing during transit from a Rio Tinto mine site and was found not far away. And on deck for today, the U.S. Federal Reserve is set to announce its latest interest rate decision. It is likely to step down to a quarter-point rate hike after a half-point increase in December. Meanwhile, earnings updates are due from Meta, T-Mobile, Thermo Fisher Scientific, Peloton, and more. And a funeral service is due to be held today in Memphis, Tennessee, for 29-year-old Tyree Nichols, weeks after an encounter with police led to his death and sparked a national outcry. The White House has said that Vice President Kamala Harris is expected to attend. The U.S. may be sending an eye-catching quantity of weapons to Ukraine, with the total American security assistance package to the country now totaling more than $27 billion. And in theory, that should mean a big payday for weapons producers. However, Wall Street Journal global aerospace and defense reporter Doug Cameron says the conflict in Ukraine hasn't been a boon to defense companies thus far. And he joins us now with more on why that is exactly. Doug, thank you for being with us.
Hey, glad to be here.
You bet. So we have now seen the world's largest defense companies reporting their quarterly earnings and their sales totals for last year, by and large. How did the war in Ukraine figure into those reports?
Well, obviously, tragically, we've been talking about this for a year, and so have the defense companies. Wartime tends to boost demand, but what you have to remember is out of the almost $30 billion now of support pledged by the US and add in more from allies, the vast majority of this has come from existing military stocks rather than new contracts and new sales. So what you have to do is backfill some of those, but you don't know how much. So far, the actual amount of sales in terms of new contracts is only like $7, $8 billion. Still a lot of money, but for someone like Lockheed Martin with sales of $70 billion a year just by itself, that gives you some context of where the Ukraine side of things fits into broader demand.
And yet investors were forecasting a surge for defense stocks because of the war. Why else, other than the fact that maybe a lot of this money is just coming from existing buckets, has that not really panned out?
What I think some people misunderstood is just how long it takes for money to flow through the system. It can take 18 months, 2 years, or even longer for, say, a typical Pentagon contract to translate into sales for a company. And even that might be spread out over a number of years. So there are contracts being awarded. There are more coming. It's just they're spread out over a number of periods of time. And there have also been some structural industrial issues which have kind of delayed how quickly companies can ramp up production of things that are in very heavy demand now, like artillery shells. Clearly, just in terms of pure contracts, Lockheed and Raytheon share about two-thirds of the contracts that have been so far awarded by the Pentagon for Ukraine-related weapons. The number of smaller contracts for radios and for artillery shells, which General Dynamics and L3 Communications, to name two, have also been awarded. But you're going to see more of these contracts over the year.
That was Wall Street Journal global aerospace and defense reporter Doug Cameron. Doug, thank you so much.
Thank you, Luke.
Coming up, one of America's biggest selling drugs is now facing competition from a near identical copycat. We'll look at what the rise of biosimilar drugs could mean for drug makers, for health providers, and for you after the break.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
It is a milestone week for the blockbuster arthritis drug Humira. After two decades of patent protection and more than $135 billion in U.S. sales, Humira, which is made by drug company AbbVie, now has competition in the form of a nearly identical drug from the company Amgen. That is raising the prospect of a drop in revenue for Humira, and not least a major shakeup in the cost of arthritis drugs. And here now to discuss what that competition could mean for AbbVie and for the broader healthcare market is Wall Street Journal health business editor Jonathan Rockoff. Jonathan, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. So explain the significance of this development for AbbVie and its drug Humira, and just exactly what is going on here.
Well, if there ever was a drug that was sort of like the elephant in the room, it's Humira. It's been the U.S.'s biggest selling drug for years. Humira usually accounts for one of the top three drivers of prescription drug spending in the United States. So if there's a way to reduce how much we spend on Humira, it will have this huge ripple effect across the whole healthcare system in the United States because so much cost is tied to this specific medicine. And now, finally, after years of litigation over when its patents end and it can begin to face some lower priced competition, that competition has finally arrived. And Amgen Inc., which is a big biotechnology company, has started selling lower priced copycat. It's not an exact replica of Humira, but it's pretty close. And
Amgen is discounting the price of that copy by 5% or 55%, depending on which price you go through. That is huge because that means that health plans and patients may be able to spend a lot less on this very popular rheumatoid arthritis and autoimmune therapy than they have been. It could help patients in particular because a lot of times their out-of-pocket costs are a percentage of how much the drug costs, right? And so for a drug that costs $90,000 a year, those sums can get pretty high.
Tell us about this competitor drug. As I understand it, this isn't just regular old competition from a generic. It's a little more complex than that. Break it down.
Yeah, it's a little bit different, right? We're all sort of used to generics, right? Humira is not a traditional kind of pill. It's a biotechnology drug, or sometimes it's called a biologic drug. And it's made from living cells, so it's much larger than a pill. For years, there was never sort of a way to develop a copy of them. So what we're talking about here is a so-called biosimilar drug, a copycat of a biologic drug. Now, the issue with the biosimilar drugs is what we want out of them is the same thing that we got out of the generic drugs, which is that these copies would flood the market and really reduce costs by a lot and relatively quickly. And the biosimilar drugs haven't followed a similar trajectory. But what we've seen in recent months is that they are sort of gaining ground over the original drugs like Humira and other expensive biologic drugs, and we're seeing more and more use of these biosimilars.
All right, so cue the competition then. What effect is that likely to have?
Well, initially, it probably won't have that much effect at all. The original drugs like Humira, generally, we've seen tend to hold on to a lot of their sales for a while. But what the Wall Street analysts are predicting in the case of Humira is that as the Amgen biosimilar drug enters the market and then some more biosimilars enter the market, we're going to really start to see sales of Humira drop and sales of these various biosimilars grow. So by the end of this year, we might see a relatively large amount of Humira sales going to biosimilars.
John, what is AbbVie's longer-term plan now that Humira is facing competition? Are they, I don't know, lowering prices to hold on to market share?
Well, they aren't lowering prices. In fact, they've actually been raising prices on Humira. But what they have been doing is discounting Humira. And by offering bigger and bigger discounts because you've raised the price, the result is that you can sort of hold on to a lot of these buyers who are like really eager to have these discounts in their pockets, right? What they really have to do is sort of figure out where they're going to be able to make up the sales that they lose to the biosimilar competition. If you have a product that's making north of $15 billion a year in sales, it's not so easy to plug in $15 billion. Now, AbbVie says that they can do it. They already have two drugs on the market also for autoimmune conditions, and they project that those two drugs will be able to cover the loss in Humira sales within a couple years. Analysts are not so sure. They think that AbbVie is going to have to find some other new products to roll out to help offset the lost sales. And what the analysts think is it will have to be a combination of drugs that AbbVie develops and then perhaps some deal making.
That was Wall Street Journal health business editor Jonathan Rockoff. Jonathan, thank you so much for the update.
Thank you.
And finally, is AI-generated art really art? And if so, whose art is it? Those are just two of the questions being raised by the publication of the 18-page graphic novel Zarya of the Dawn. Author Chris Castanova composed the images for the book on Midjourney, a service that creates new images based on artwork and photos that are already online. Castanova credited the software as a co-author, and last year, the novel became the first work of its kind to get a copyright from the Library of Congress. However, Journal reporter James Hookway says that copyright is now under review, setting off debates both legal and creative.
There's a lot of dispute and debate in the artistic community about whether any of this is really art, but the creatives who are using it see it primarily as a tool, as a way to get their ideas out there and see if they actually make sense and are worth pursuing. More specific legal issue is that in the United States, at least, the Copyright Office considers works to have been created solely by artificial intelligence as not being eligible for copyright registration. So that's the question. Is the work created solely by the AI? How do you assess all of the human inspiration and the written prompts and everything else that goes into feeding the machine that creates these images?
We should note that Midjourney didn't respond to a request for comment, and the Copyright Office says it doesn't comment on pending cases. And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.